In a world that can be challenging, and at times unpredictable, it's hard to find moments to focus on what you need. Join Stephanie James on The Spark as she guides you to use your inner flame to ignite your best life. As a best-selling author, psychotherapist, transformational life coach, and international show host, Stephanie is dedicated to helping you create a life that takes you, your goals, and your passions to the next level, so you can live a life that is fully lit up and fully alive. She believes that your life is meant to be a beautiful expression of the things that light you up. That by living your dreams, you give permission to others to do the same. Are you ready to feel alive and inspired to fuel your dreams and put a fire behind your desires? Let's ignite a spark in one another that will illuminate the world. The Spark, with your host, Stephanie James, starts now.
Hi, this is Stephanie James. Welcome to The Spark. So happy to have you here with me. So thankful for the wonderful listeners, the wonderful emails coming through. And just to remind you how important you are. And the message that I feel like I continue to broadcast is that your healing matters. As we heal, then we become the pebble in the pond, and the concentric circles of healing radiate from us and help everyone we're in contact with. And then that beautiful healing comes back to us. So I am here today with my wonderful guest, author Joseph Patrick Fair. And we're going to be talking about so many things. We're going to be talking about his book, To Die a Hero. And I just want to welcome you, Joseph, to The Spark.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. The honor is mine. Listen to your podcast all the time. Love it. And I believe your podcast lifts people up and gives them the courage to take on big goals.
Thank you, Joseph. Well, my gosh, I want to dive right in and speak with you first about your history, because you were a cop. This is a book that is, small-time cop, big-time crime. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I would like to start with the The book is a fiction novel in the interest of avoiding conflicts. Yes, I did work in a small town part-time as a police officer. Previous to that, I worked as a firefighter. I heard the calling early in life. I was watching Chips and Rescue 51 and all that stuff. And I remember being about 12 years old. And I turned around to my dad and I said, that's what I want to do with my life. And my dad said, well, you know, you could always take over the family business too. And I said, this looks real interesting, because Ponch, he gets to ride that motorcycle with a full uniform and a duty belt. And I said, it's untouchable, Dad. I have to find out what that's all about. Went on. Had friends that were firefighters, started out there about 15 years later, switched over to the police department, and knew part of the way through. I had a binder, wrote down ideas. I knew a book would come eventually. Since I retired, the book's been a great thing.
So this book, you said, you know, it's fiction, and yet, of course, it's going to draw from your own experience. And
yes.
Yeah.
I listened to, it clicked. It clicked one day. I was listening to a podcast with Stephen King, and that he had mentioned that he had had good writing and that he had the luxury to have some painful experiences in life. And it clicked in my head. I thought, wow, that's a really interesting thing to say on a podcast. And then he said, some of my best writing came from reflecting back on a painful experience. And I said, boy, I've had some painful experiences. I need to reflect and write that in a journal. And that's the seed of the book. And yes, when you have good writing, you take an experience, a silhouette of an experience, then you fictionalize it and anonymize it. And you take the structure and you repurpose it into your story. And at the core of the book, the close of the second act, it's an experience that I had that taught me a lot, and I had to share it.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I imagined that inspiration came from the different things that you experienced, and yet not everyone's a writer, Joseph. How did you, you know, kind of hone that craft?
I will tell you that I had the luxury of being born with a learning disability called dyslexia, which, if you know anything about dyslexia, I had some struggle in grade school learning to read and spell. I was lucky to have the right mother that got me to a tutor and made me go to the library when I was 10 or 11 years old and forced me to read before I eat dinner. It worked me through it. The flip side of dyslexia is that it gives you a wild imagination, and it also forces you to be a little bit of a photographic thinker. That's how you get past dyslexia. So then you have these experiences, you have sort of a semi-photographic memory, and it makes for some great writing. I think people without dyslexia have to really try to tell a story and write. And I think people with dyslexia, they just show up and the story just goes onto the page, and it's usually very colorful and magical. That probably is what I'd like to explain how my writing came about, is the dyslexia. If you look at a guy like Elon Musk and all his inventions and whatnot, I believe he says that that's tied to dyslexia, creative dyslexia.
Wow, I had not heard that before. That is so fascinating to me. And so it says end of watch number one. So I'm imagining there's several books inside of you, Joseph. This is just the first.
You are too smart. You are too smart. Correct. And let's get it on the record. I started to write the book and the ending wasn't right. And I fought with it. I fought with the ending. And then I thought, I have to change this ending so that I have an end of watch two. Because if I kill off the main character, there's just no end of watch two. He has to live. He has to get injured and be in the hospital and live to get us end of watch two. Yes, end of watch two is in outline right now. And I'm working with my editor and proofreader, and it will come out eventually. I have three or four projects going right now. But yes, end of watch two will come out, and maybe at some point there'll be end of watch three.
Well, so give us a little bit, if you will, of a teaser about what the premise of the book is about.
The premise of the book is a classic Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, about a small town cop who is a little selfish and a little rough around the edges. And he needs to grow up in life, and he needs to find some selflessness and some structure and become a team player. And as it goes in most hero's journeys, he has to fall off the horse a few times and dust himself off to grow up and become a team player. And at the core of the book is a small town guy who has some major adversaries, accidents, trouble, stresses, forces him to grow up. And then at the end of the book, he's capable of slaying the dragon, basically facing a natural disaster and saving people's lives. And if a person reads a book, I believe they understand the fact that we have challenges in life to overcome. They make us stronger, and then we're ready for the finale of life.
Oh, yeah. I love this. I love Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. And I think that also is what makes amazing writing, when we're inspired and we can reflect our own journeys, you know,
totally
we're like reading that book.
So
it's, you know, it sounds like it's like amazingly relatable, because I do think, you know, we all face these difficulties and challenges, and they can become truly what inspire us. You know, as I say, it can become the match point that ignites something within us that then becomes our gift to the world.
When I got out of the hospital from one accident, and I had some struggle, I realized I have to write the book. It just, it's done. It's done. I had this experience. I know people will get value from it. I can't just let the opportunity slide away. And I got out of the hospital. I was at home recovering from the accident. And that's really when I got the typewriter, the computer out, sat down at the keyboard, wrote out the outline, and just typed away on that. And it was basically a 3 or 4 year journey to get the book from the idea stage to publication. But yes, out of trouble usually comes opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about, you know, I'm hearing that as part of your hero's journey. What else, Joseph, for you? I mean, I'm hearing the great thing about being this little boy who loved chips, which I totally relate to because I loved chips.
I can say that I had a wild imagination as a kid. And I could also say that my mom would take me to the store to get toys, and it had to be a fire truck, police car, ambulance. I just didn't play with anything else. And occasionally G.I. Joe. But yes, that I was that kid. I was set on that course. One day my dad said, well, you know, I wasn't going to share this with you, but your great uncle Roy, was a police officer, highly decorated. And then at one point he became the mayor of the town. And he said, it probably is in your blood to go serve the community. And he said, probably in your genetics to go do this job. And finally gave me his blessing. And I took off to do public service.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, and I love when I hear it, you know, framed in that way. And it makes me wonder, you know, here's kind of a bigger question for you, Joseph, is, you know, a couple of years ago when the Black Lives Matter movement was happening, and there was a lot of negativity around police officers. And actually, I imagine, you know, some feeling of threat around police officers' safety at that time. What was that personally like for you going through that?
Yeah, that was that's a good question. That's a good question. There's been a number of trouble things in law enforcement. I believe that anytime you put on the uniform, you have to kind of have your head on a swivel and take care of yourself, look out for your partner, all that type of stuff. I believe that if you've got the right mindset and you've got a servant's heart and you're going out doing the job to better your community, if that's your goal, the people support you. They love you. They support you. It's way easier in a small town. I've had a few friends in a big city. It's way easier to be a police officer in a small town because you might help somebody pull their car out of a ditch. You might sit down and have dinner with them. They might call you to the house to get advice on how to get Uncle Bob out of jail. I mean, it's a different experience, you know. How do we get the bail money put together? You know, is there a charity to help us? So the experience is different. I believe we do have a trouble with building trust between the community and the police department right now. And in a big city, I'm not sure what the answer is. In a small town, people know each other, and you're doing the job in a different way, I guess is the best way to, when I was doing it, occasionally one of my friends who was a firefighter would see me on a traffic stop, and they wouldn't pull up. They would drive to the end of the block, and they would park, and they would observe to make sure I was safe. And then when the traffic stop was over and the person pulled away, they went on their way. That type of thing in a big city helps you a lot with your personal safety, and you don't really get riots in a small town. You don't get protests, whatnot. But policing does have public relations issues, and it seems to be much worse in a big city.
Yeah, I love this thought of, you know, being a cop in a small town and the intimacy and the true connection in the community you have. And that was my experience. Actually, I lived in Cheyenne, Wyoming for almost 20 years. And for 10 of those years, I worked for the school district, and our resource officers that I worked with were some of my favorite people. They were so involved with the kids. you know, they were the people standing there. The kids would come by and give them a high five. And, you know, anytime we had an issue, I worked at a little south side, kind of wrong side of the tracks, elementary school for a while. And, you know, those police officers were some of our, you know, greatest allies. So I hear you when you're saying, I think that there's a different mentality, you know, and you have such a, I love, you know, where you're coming from as you're talking about being a person of service and being really a part of the community. And perhaps not every police officer has that same mentality. You know, we would hope so. We would hope so.
I think in the process of bringing people in, I think that a few bad apples get in. I do know from the backside that in a police department, they're constantly trying to weed out bad people. I believe there's a statistical anomaly. 2% probably of people that apply just have no business doing the job, and they do everything they can to get them out. And I had the experience when I was in there, I saw somebody, they had no business. Eventually the sergeant gets with them and says, I think you should move on to something else. You don't have the right mindset for this job. Being a school liaison officer is probably one of the best jobs in law enforcement. And I will tell you, doing security at the high school football game, you talk about a really good assignment. Every time I ever got requested to do that, I was right on the list. I'll be there. I'll take care of that. And the community building, and often my buddies from the fire department were there also with an ambulance and a fire truck. And we'd get a pizza, and we'd hang out, watch the game, and be there if there was an emergency. Occasionally there was an emergency. Often we were just there as a backup system. But yeah, loved being at the school. One of my favorite assignments.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, to your point, there were 2% of people that weren't a good fit. I think we could say that for every career, and it's probably higher than 2% for some.
Every profession, I believe the 2% of them just have no business being there. I do know even in school teaching, occasionally people get in school teaching and they're really not on the service end of it. They're maybe on the side of the paycheck side of it instead of the service. You got to really care about kids to be in the school and do that job, because it's so tough. It wears on your nerves. Yes. And it's emotionally draining. Mm-hmm. And if you're born with that proper spirituality, probably you make a good school teacher. A patience, spirituality. It's similar as a police officer. You got to have the right mindset. I went out every day with the mindset that I want to do all the right things for all the right reasons. And I had a successful career at it. Not everybody is in that place.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. So the next thing I'm curious about for you are, what are the experiences that you feel like as you look back in your career, and some of these may have even informed the book, what are some of the experiences that really caused you to grow, or maybe changed your perspective, or opened you up to a new way of thinking or being as you went through your own journey?
Yes, there were two or three experiences. I will tell you one that's it's a little embarrassing, but you get a lot of growth out of embarrassment. During field training, they tell you like three or four times, just, you make a traffic stop, you're going to get their license. You want to make sure you get the paperwork back to them at the end of the traffic stop. But when you're due, you may be nervous, set it on the dashboard. Then you may go back up to the car and talk to them a little bit. And then you may dismiss them from a traffic stop and then get back to your car and realize that their driver's license is on the dashboard, which is pretty much one of the big no-nos you don't want to do. They could get pulled over by another police officer and say, where's my ID? Well, some other police officer forgot to give it back to me. Those type of things happen in training. And then eventually when you get seasoned, you get much better at not having that happen. But those things make you grow as a person, make you figure out what your system is, get better at the job and whatnot. But yes, You have really good days that you love at that job. There's days that you struggle. There are days that you have a complete success. You arrest somebody, felony warrant. You know that they've been looking for that person for a month or two. Feels tremendous. It's unbelievable when you do that. And then you have the occasional day where the chief calls and wants to see you in his office. And yes, you learn. You learn from those experiences.
Yeah. Well, and if we just totally take the police side out of it, you know, it really struck me when we were visiting before the interview that you've also had, you know, there's a spiritual journey here as well.
Correct. Yep. In my life, I have had some ups and downs and some struggle like most people. And I had to, at one point, fortify my mindset with positive information, podcasts, whatnot. When I finally got what I call spiritually connected to the right material, it's helped me stay focused on my creativity. At times, my creativity has waned and I couldn't focus in on it. And I would write a little bit, then I would stall and I couldn't go any farther. I had the intuition to say, I need to put the earbuds in, need to get my iPhone, I need to put something like Stephanie James on to listen to get me through a tough day. And then maybe the next morning I wake up and I'm right at the typewriter, just typing away. So yes, my success is tied to my ability to stay connected to spiritual ideas.
Yeah, beautiful. All right. So, Joseph, really quickly, I want to make sure that I'm not missing important topics that you want to make sure that we talk about.
Let me pause you for a minute. Your okay. wisdom and insight is right up there. I mean, I thought I had some wisdom and insight. You've spent a lot of time meditating and praying, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. It shows. Oh, I'm behind you. I'm behind you in the learning curve. But when I see it, I know it. Do you get that?
Oh, thank you, Joseph.
When I see somebody spiritually connected to higher power, I see it.
Anyway,
I am commercially motivated and I am spiritually motivated. And I'm commercially motivated because I want to take some money at some point and do some charity work, maybe in my community, maybe nationally. The key thing when I prayed about the book and I prayed about writing magazine articles is to take the platform and author, get some notoriety, which you are doing for me. Thank you, by the way.
Yes.
I think this is 10th podcast I've been on or something, and then make a platform, do a little coaching, hopefully earn some revenue, turn that back into charity work, help some people, homeless, whatnot. As a police officer, you see all kinds of tragedy. I wanted to keep this as positive as possible, but I mean, I've seen things with kids that you don't even want to hear about, people abusing their children.
Oh, yeah.
I understand the core structure is that we have a society where there's people that just, they're not raised by the parents well, I guess is a good example. Then they're spiritually bankrupt. Then they take out their frustrations on their kids and they live a dysfunctional life. And my daughter would like to start a foundation at some point to help people in the community. And I told her it couldn't hurt. To make a little money and seed it. So it's a long-term goal to help her get her own charitable foundation going.
Oh, beautiful.
And
yeah.
That's what part of the book and the author thing is about for me.
Okay.
How am I doing so far?
You're doing awesome. Yeah.
It's working.
Okay. So if there's something else though, do you want me to talk about the charity or is there something I want to make sure I'm...
The key that I would like to get in the second segment, if we could, is the magazine.
Okay.
And when I do any marketing, the author with the book and magazine is my target artist. And I don't know if we could plug the magazine or how you want to go about that. You're writing magazine articles, something like that.
Okay.
that thing, it engages on my social media.
Sure.
And it could engage with your target artists also.
Okay, let's do it.
All right.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. Thrilled to have you with us for this wonderful conversation I'm having with Joseph Patrick Fair. We're talking about his book, To Die a Hero. And before we get back to the interview, I just want to invite you to go on to stephaniejames.world. So many offerings there for you. You can get a free visualization. You can sign up for a 20-minute connect call with me, which I'd love to connect with you and to see how I might be able to serve you in igniting the lights and the sparks in your own life. So go to stephaniejames.world. You can see a trailer for my new upcoming film, When Sparks Ignite. And you can also find out more about my Becoming Fierce Women's Retreat, which is coming up June 24th through the 26th. And we will be filming that for my new film series, Becoming Fierce, coming out on Plex Network. So coming back to this great interview here with Joseph. Joseph, let's talk a little bit about the other places where you've expanded your writing, because it's not just in books that you're writing for. Tell us a little bit else about writing for, I know you've been writing for some magazines. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Oneness Magazine, probably my best writing yet. It's getting a lot of attention in social media. I wrote an article on overcoming adversity. I have faced a little bit of adversity in my life, public safety and service. So I had a good platform for that. And yes, I am possibly at some point going to write a self-help book. And I am writing the magazine articles and networking with people to move forward toward that goal.
That is fantastic. And I'm going to ask you in a moment if you might just read a brief excerpt from that article. And before that, I want to, say that I imagine you would be an amazing person to write and a very knowledgeable person to write about self-help, because I know that as a trauma specialist, I have worked with police officers, I've worked with firemen, I've worked with railroad workers, all kinds of people who have gone through very significant traumas, as I imagine every policeman goes through some amount of trauma. And so to be able to, I mean, you're so positive and you've got this wonderful lightheartedness and this, beautiful spirituality to you. I don't think that's always how people think of cops. And, I think that figured out.
I'm on the lighter side of police, and I would like to make a joke about this. Occasionally, when I was doing police work, people said, you're too soft. You need to write more tickets and need to hold people accountable. I never let anybody go on a felony, obviously. You just can't do that as a police officer. But I gave quite a few warnings for speed, and I saw the job more as engaging with my community and motivating people opposed to punishing people. And that is good police work in a small town. And there has to be a balance of both. And I was definitely on the motivating side more than the punishing side. But you wanted an excerpt out of the book, and I am super proud of this writing. And I would like to say that if you've had post-traumatic stress or something like that, and you've had to bounce back from it, this I don't know that was Alexa, sorry.
That's okay.
Don't worry about it.
Alexa, cancel. This is what comes out of it. Anyway, Overcoming Adversity, page 42 of the November 2021 magazine, Oneness Magazine. I have to give a byline to Marcus LaPointe also. We co-wrote this together. Joseph Patrick Fair, Marcus LaPointe. If humans are clay and God is the sculptor, then life must possess some change, and change can be difficult. if we resist change, then we are not participating in life with fearless courage. If we face and overcome adversity with courage, then we are living life from a dynamic that surrenders creativity of our life experience to God. If a person accepts God creates all, then the power of creativity is in the correct actor-observer balance. In my article, I'm trying to convey the intellectual idea that adversity is a growing tool, and we have to have some pain in our life. I think people try to escape pain in life instead of accept the fact that it's probably the best tool to get us stronger. And if you let God shape the clay and trust God, the growing happens quickly. And that's what I've tried to do with my life.
Yeah. I mean, that's beautiful. I think that it's really is interesting that, and I think you're right on, you know, that's a lot of the work I do is working with people who really are avoiding at times the painful piece or have shoved it down for so long that it's created depression or what I call dis-ease or disease in their bodies. And
I had some disease also called diverticulitis, which is a classic police problem. But keep going. Sorry about that.
No, that makes so much sense to me, right? I mean, our hearts, minds, and our guts are all connected.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And so I think if we're not dealing with the pain or the feelings that are coming up, that can be created. And so again, yes. like we had said at the beginning, coming full circle to when we go through these difficult times, that it can actually be something that benefits us greatly. You know, I always find myself praying like, okay, please God, give it to me in like really nice ways. I promise I'll listen.
But that doesn't always happen. I want it in small bite-sized pieces. I don't want a full meal of pain and suffering. Just give me a bite-sized taste today, a piece of chocolate that size. And then, but I believe God knows instinctually when we need to grow, and he will give us a heaping helping of growing strong when we're ready for it. And then we have to digest it. And then we have to reflect a little bit on it. And then we got to get honest about how do we handle it next time. And then we become better at handling adversity through reflecting on how we handled it incorrectly the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to make sure, you know, that I'm speaking to for my own experience, whether you call it God or source or the divine or your higher power, you know, that there is something that it's like, it's wiser than us. It's greater than us. And oftentimes with our small minds, we can envision something wonderful for ourselves, but we have no idea how, when we co-create with that energy, that vision for us is so much bigger than we could have ever imagined. And it sounds like you've tapped into that in your life.
I did realize at one point when I was writing the book that it was very mediocre. And it was a series of stories that didn't have grit and it didn't have truth. And I prayed on and off, and I got some divine spiritual motivation from that. And that's really the glue that made the book work. So you're totally right. I don't like to say the word God either. I like to say higher power. There's a higher power behind our human experience. And I would like to give credit to the book, mostly to the higher power. I'm just the conduit to type it out on the typewriter. If I listen to that and I cooperate, I get beautiful writing. And if I try to use my ego, I get very average writing.
I'm resonating with you so much. That has been absolutely my experience. So, you know, through that article that you were just sharing with us, that was so powerful, you know, and so part of your message is helping people to really, it sounds like, take that adversity that they're going through and to turn it into wisdom.
Correct. As a police officer, I suffered a little bit of post-traumatic stress, like most police officers do. And I had the fortune to realize that it's just part of the job. And you have to connect with nature. As strange as it sounds, you become out of balance with nature. Then you have to go out in the woods, walk around, breathe, surround yourself with nature to try to get past post-traumatic stress. One of the goals with the self-help is to help other people, military, police, fire, EMS, that have had post-traumatic stress, give them a place to start and a place to move toward healing from that. Really, self-help group, counselor, all that is probably the best way to do it. But materials like what I'm reading in the book sometimes motivate somebody to step out of their comfort zone and seek help.
Yeah. So I was just going to ask you, you know, what would those steps be? And it sounds like definitely seeking out support, getting a group or a counselor. And I love what you are saying about nature. I always find it fascinating that when we're in nature, nature naturally, it absorbs negative ions from us. It's like it's just alchemically taking the negativity out of us. So, you know, you'll notice why you feel better if you take a hike or spend time in nature.
I wasn't going to go there because this is embarrassing, but I spent an hour with my shoes and socks off rubbing my feet in the grass yesterday for exactly what you're talking about, to get grounded. Because I had a lot of stuff to get done that day. I had a long to-do list. And I thought, I'll start out with taking a barefoot walk in the grass to get in the right mindset, to get my to-do list and get it done. No, my life is wonderful now as a writer. I am blessed in so many ways I can't even explain. There was a time, probably in the middle of my career, where the stress of the job brought me down, made me feel heavy often. And I am here to help anybody else that's been in that place to overcome, grow, stretch. And I would hate to see anybody else get stuck in post-traumatic stress like I was for a while. I'm here to help others.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think that's just it. As you learn, Joseph, to heal, it's kind of what we were talking about at the beginning. You know, now you are that conduit. You are that conduit so that, you know, healing and love and that, you know, that it's like a healing balm comes through you. So others can start to heal.
Correct.
And Joseph, yeah. I love that you were outside with your shoes off. That is nothing to be embarrassed about. That is literally a daily ritual for me.
It works. I'm a practical scientist in the way that I think. I'm a practical scientist in the way I think, and it works. And if anybody wants to challenge me on this hypothesis, get an Apple Watch, figure out what your pulse is, right? Walk around the house with your shoes on, then go outside in the grass, walk around, and look at your pulse about 20 minutes later. It'll be down a couple beats, and I give it to the grass. I love it. Bonding with nature, untouchable.
Yeah. And there is scientific research that supports exactly what you are saying. They've done so many studies about what happens. And I was at my acupuncturist's, this has been a couple months ago, I had vertigo. And he said to me, and I was working at the time, probably 14 hours a day. I mean, it was just, I was overloaded with all the different projects I was doing. And my life was not in balance. And he was doing some muscle testing. And he said, you know, you've got to get in balance. You need to spend more time with your shoes off. He said, because the ground can't absorb it through the rubber of our shoes. So you literally have to be in physical contact with nature. And so I recommitted to doing exactly what you did, you know, and just having that time to really connect. And you do feel different.
you do feel better. There is science behind what you're saying. I listened to podcasts with Lewis Howes. He had somebody on his podcast talking about that. There's UCLA did a scientific study, and clearly getting your feet to touch the ground 20 minutes a day is good for your physical health.
I love it. I love it. Well, Joseph, what's ahead for you? I mean, I'm hearing there's an outline, there's another book coming. What is it that's really sparking right now, your passion, your interest, kind of bringing you continued inspiration? What is that?
Yeah, I have a buddy who wrote a law enforcement book also. He's in the process of transitioning to converting his book to a TV show. And in the long term, to see my book go into a film or TV is probably my long-term goal. And then my short-term goal is to write more self-help and make myself available for coaching and come on podcasts and meet wonderful people and network with wonderful people like you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's such a joy to have you here on the show. And that sounds like, you know, that inspiration that now in retirement, that creative spark has ignited in you.
It has ignited. And for anybody out there that has not ignited, I would like to tell them that you have to put some fuel on the fire to keep it burning. And you can't let the troubles of the world weigh you down. And I'm a person that believes in proactively staying healthy, spiritually healthy through putting the earbuds in every day, start my day in the morning, little meditation, listen to an inspirational message. And then at any point, if I feel burned out in the day, I need to lay down on the couch, shut my eyes, breathe, listen to another message, and not wait for me to have trouble, proactively service my spirituality.
Perfect. Perfect. I have to tell you, I mean, you could be in my office right now, you know, with helping my clients, because I feel like we have so much crossover in our messages. You know, I always say that's one of the reasons Google is so successful, is because they have sleep pods, they have nap pods, so that their employees can lie down in the middle of the day and do exactly that when you need to shut down, when you need to reboot. So essential for our well-being.
Holistically, yeah, giving somebody a holistically balanced work environment probably doubles their productivity. And Google has been magical with the creative stuff that they brought out. And if you even look at the Google Mail and stuff like that, it's just they've got the right people. They take good care of them. And they listen to creative ideas, which is awesome as a company.
Yeah. Well, Joseph, how can people contact you? How can they get a hold of your book? I want to make sure they've got some links here.
Yes. The easiest place to find the book is on Amazon, To Die a Hero, End of Watch 1, or you could put in Joseph Patrick Fair. That will get you to the book. The easiest place to find me probably is LinkedIn, Joseph Fair. Facebook, I get a lot of interaction on social media. I can't get back to everybody. I try to get back to people when I can. A little bit on Twitter. But if you are listening to this, watching this, you want to contact me, send me a friend request on LinkedIn, and I will try to help you get to resources to help you.
Wonderful. Well, and at the end of every show, Joseph, I ask my guests, what is the essential message that you want to leave with the audience?
Yeah. I like this message because there's so many people trying to seek success in life. When I was a younger guy, I believed that success was about 90% luck and 10% hard work. And 40 years later, I have discovered that success is 90% hard work and 10% good luck. And if anybody out there wants to live an exceptional life, it starts out with writing down your dreams and goals, holding yourself accountable, measuring the result, and putting in the work. It's just, there's no success, no substitution for putting in the work, and network with people that you know are going to inspire you. They're going to bring the best out of you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. The book is To Die a Hero, End of Watch One, Joseph Patrick Fair. Thank you so much for being here on The Spark.
Thank you. It was my honor.